So today I'm really honoured and very excited to be here talking to the legendary Barbara Wren. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Kate.
How are you?
I'm really good and really good to catch up with you.
Well, I was introduced to your work. It was when my son was little, so maybe like about 12, 13 years ago now. And I knew some people who were doing your courses, and actually over the years I've met a lot of people that's done your courses, and every single person says how it changed their life, how it was such a massive kind of impact for them. Do you want to tell us a bit about how you got into the work in the first place and how you set up the college?
Yes, thank you. Well, I mean, it was through health exploration that I got into it. Initially, I became very ill after my fourth child due to antibiotics, and I got very much into Iyengar yoga, but I couldn't understand why they didn't have any nutrition. It was obviously a big hint that I should get on with it, and started exploring getting better, and then met Dr. Alec Forbes, who set up the Bristol Cancer Help. And we set up a natural health centre here near where, and it was just an absolute explosion of expose to everything you can imagine, and set up a college then with my ex-husband. But I was always very much more interested in the sort of energetic side. And so then, after I'd left my marriage, my youngest son and I set up the college, And more recently, Hay House came to ask me to write my first book. And so I said to them, well, I've never thought of writing a book, but I'm only interested in how denigrated nutrition has been. And I would love to write a book that integrates spirit with physical. And so was able to write Semi Awakening, then, as you know, the second book. Yes. So just looking. It's not what you use, it's how you use it and what the philosophy is behind
But
it.
what inspired you to set up a college in the first place? Because a lot of people get interested in this, but not everyone thinks, oh, I'll set up a college. That's it. That's a big undertaking, isn't
I
it?
never did. I never had the intention. I was just nagged by so many people. And it was that sort of ethos, late 1970s, people were becoming much more curious. Alternative medicine, if you can call it that, was really beginning to blossom. And so, just started with small groups at home, then it grew and grew and grew and grew.
So you wrote all the
Yes.
course material yourself?
All of my part of it is on my own. Yes. I mean, the basic nutrition and anatomy and physiology, obviously, by people who love that.
And you mentioned a name just then, but who were the people that you learnt from? Who were your kind of mentors and
Well, I had, not who I learnt from, but who had a great influence upon me. I would say that when I met Dr. Max Gerson's granddaughter, that had a huge impact. And really, that was the birth of me becoming fascinated by techniques. I'd been a nurse at St. Mary's, and back then, a long, long time ago, there were sort of rudimentary techniques still being used. And so it was then Dr. Alec Forbes, and then Dr. Max Gerson. But the real awakening was meeting a five-element acupuncture. I trained in homeopathy because I thought maybe I should be respectable instead of this thing that was evolving through me, nail it down. And but people became more and more interested, and I was aware that these things had lost the nutritional side. But I became more and more interested in energy, vitality, and light, really, which is very much where I'm at now.
So, when did you found CNN?
CNN, that was 17 years ago. Yes. And
And that's still going as correspondence courses, is it?
it's still going as a distance learning, but we are going to actually close a year come July, because I kind of feel like so many years, it's 31 years that I've been teaching in a structured form, that I just really wish for the freedom to be able to speak about things in the moment. As you know, things are moving so rapidly, and by my personality, it's always moving forward. And we're in such exciting times, aren't we? You know, particularly when you start looking at raw foods and how everything's coming together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you led us on to your latest book. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
The latest one, uh-huh. Our Return to the Light. Well, I have to admit I wrote it kicking and screaming because cellular awakening had kind of evolved over all the years I've been teaching, yeah. You know, like the Hoodwinks work. But then it was really very strongly my awareness. It was actually very interesting because I'm just going back to Bulgaria for the third time, and they've been asking me all sorts of questions that led me up different pathways. But I became very interested in all aspects of fats and oils, as you know, from Budwig. But I also realised that was from the past. And I started to look at the huge increase, particularly of heated fats,
mm-hmm.
and how it was affecting. Because my whole journey really has been looking at how the body traps light, but I needed to find out how it creates it. And I didn't feel I'd got to that point of how it creates its own light, which is, you know, which really has happened since the second book, as always, that sort of thing. So the second book is really trying to join up all the connections of if we come in with predispositions, because there are, you know, I just don't know why people don't look at predispositions. As a homeopath, we talk about miasms.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking about energetic blueprints. But if we're looking at nutrition as a tool, I want you to know how did it land? How did it land in the physical body?
Mm-hmm.
How did it manifest physically? And so was looking at, you know, just one way of looking at how the cell changes and seeing how the cell hardens with dis-ease.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at that misplaced calcium where it goes into the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, I love the work of Bechan, Gaston Leeson, Royal Rye, Tesla, you know, I think they're the absolute greats. And realizing that the change from the perfect to difficult is 16 different stages.
Wow.
And so the influence of the humors, as the ancients call it, the body fluids, will influence how we set the formation of the cells.
Wow.
And each of those changes is actually showing as a change of hydration, pH, temperature, light availability, and if you stay with the minerals, misplacement of calcium. So that sort of hardening and, if you like, growth supplying. You know, so it seems to me over the years, with the sort of things people have been eating, they've become more dense.
Yeah.
Which doesn't kind of go with people using light, because there are very, very few things I'm sure about. But one thing I'm totally, totally convinced about at this point in my life is that light controls everything, because everything is light.
Right.
Now, even Einstein is saying, well, you know, maybe the best way to describe matter is congealed light.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm absolutely sure, depending on the speed of the resonance of the light, then it takes on different forms,
uh-huh.
And ultimately quite dense matter. And so if the body is becoming sick, there is this kind of density and the lack of light controlling its mechanism.
Yeah. You talked about the way the body traps light. Could you expand on that?
Yes, of course. So this is very much, I mean, all of it's to do with nutrition, but the way the body traps light is the cell has a triple layer. And so if we have the cell with the nucleus in the middle and the inner and outer cell membrane, the differential between the inner and outer cell membrane is very, very important. It needs to be very, very different. So the nucleus should stay positive, the inside negative, and the outside very positive.
Uh-huh.
And if it can, it will attract all of the electrons that we take in with vital food. And you also, you know, we stand on the earth barefoot, we roll on the earth, we gather up the electrons. So the earth donates the electrons. So because they're negatively charged, they gravitate towards the positive outer membrane, and make a sort of halo. And it's in that electron cloud that the photons are trapped, and then the photons attract the oxygen. So you have the cell, this very opposing charge, the electron cloud, the photons and the oxygen. And what is so lovely now when things have moved on, if there are enough electrons, photons, particularly photons and oxygen molecules, then transmutation takes place. And this is something that hasn't really been put into nutrition, other than by people like Steiner, you know, Rife, and all of those people,
yeah,
really understanding that, you know, one element can change into another.
I think it's really interesting that there were all those people working around that time, wasn't there? Like Steiner and Tesla and Bechamp.
Yeah.
And then it all kind of died down, didn't it, for like another 100 years?
Well, they were so heavily persecuted.
Yeah.
You know, or bumped off, you know, as the expression goes. No, they were silenced. And there were so many people who followed Rife's work that they all lost their funding.
No.
Yes. An absolute trail. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because I have an old friend of 36 years ago, Harry Oldfield, who for me comes nearest to their sort of work.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I met up with him after 36 years just a few months ago, which was amazing because he used to come to stay with us when he'd made his first Curium machines, and we'd go down into the cellar and you could see the movement of light through the meridians coming in the chakras. And Harry could tell you if you had a headache 2 hours ago and it lasted for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know. So, and he's just developed it more and more and more. And interestingly, he's using pulsed energy through different coloured crystals in a saline solution.
Mm-hmm.
So he's using this really heightened energy, a resonance, to match the correct resonance in various parts of the body. So he's very much following in the footsteps of Tesla and Rife.
And doing healing that way.
Yes.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, I can't wait for us to get back together more to spend time because of having discovered these ways with light from nutrition and techniques, then combining it with his ability.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Extremely exciting.
Do you want to tell us about the techniques? I use a lot of them myself. When I teach a 5-day course and people think they're coming to get raw food recipes, and I always start the beginning of the course with things like enemas and urine therapy. And it really throws them completely. But I just did a liver flush a couple of weeks ago, and I try and do them fairly regularly. But it was such a good experience and really just reaffirm for me that I think all those kind of things are really the foundation of what we're doing here, and that you can't progress, no matter how good your diet, you can't progress without including those. Do you want to share with us, first of all, how you came to learn about them?
Yes, that's good. Good question. Now, that really was the influence of Gerson when I got to know his granddaughter, because my own experience would be I would do something and I'd feel better for a certain length of time, and then it all cave in. And I'd be thinking, why is this? You know, maybe it was sort of a 3-week cycle. And of course, as you know, he's terribly keen about enemas and how important they are. And so it made me reflect upon the things I'd learnt, you know, maybe from my grandmother, from my nursing. And it seemed to me obvious that if you're asking your body to change, you're giving it more work. And most people, as you know, come to the doorstep when they're ill, you know, so the body's already struggling. So it seemed to me very, very obvious that we need to support all the different parts of the body. And gradually, one learned that if light controls everything and transmutation, then I would pick out the work of Edgar Cayce with the castor oil, absolutely miraculous, and the urine therapy, which I think is quite an instrument for transmutation, all of those things. So, yes, all of them really have been developed to support different organs on the route of elimination. Because, as you know, somebody suddenly starts to eat raw, then usually the liver goes, oh, my God, you know, do you mind having something else? because the liver has the lymph and the blood have become overloaded. So Gerson was a huge, huge influence in really awakening that spark in me to see how important it was that if you put something in, which of course is very Eastern, put something in, you've got to let go. And you have to let go on all levels, which I think is a bit that has not been acknowledged with nutrition.
Right.
You can't do nutrition without touching all levels.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you looked into Ayurveda much? Because they do a lot of...
Yes, I've experienced it rather than looked into it, you know, at yoga retreats in India.
Yeah.
I have to say it's the five element that rings true. Maybe I'm more of a Buddhist than I am. Anything else? The five element, in a way, I think it's up to date as well. Do you know what I mean? There are certain aspects with Ayurveda that, so much cooked and so much ghee.
Into
people, you know, if they have stagnant liver chi, then all of those fats and oils are simply going to go into the lymph and into the blood and create huge stagnation.
So do you practice the techniques yourself still?
Oh gosh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, they're part of breathing, I think.
I ask, how regularly do you have colonics?
I used to practice colonics, and I haven't done colonics that much at all recently, but my enema bag is always at the ready. I'm breaking fever. And urine rubs, I always have to make sure the plumber's coming, then I go and search the bathroom to see what's hanging about. But urine therapy, castor oil, enemas, Epsom salt baths, you know, skin brushing, and urine packs. All of those things, I think, are so powerful within a program. I really do.
And liver flushes?
Are you talking about the gall?
Yeah.
I actually don't agree with it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those techniques. It was quite interesting in that a student who was a chemist pointed out that actually it is soap, the little green things. It's a product like that because one's overwhelmed the liver with so much oil. But what happened, Kate, actually, there was a student who had a close friend who ended up with a liver transplant because of it. And so I did get students to really persist in contacting Andre Weiss about it, and he said, yes, he had had people have problems, because if there is a large gallstone that gets in the common bile duct, then one's the trouble. So I'm much more in favour of doing things gently, you know, the diet, castor packing, enemas, so that the stones are dissolved gradually,
Sorry, did you just say the little green stones that come out, you don't think? Stones.
No, they're soap.
Right.
Yeah. But you can drag a real stone with it, and that could be danger if people have them. You know, it's kind of too sudden. Yeah. So it's just probably the only technique that I absolutely don't agree with.
What about coffee enemas?
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. You know, done sensibly, responsibly within a program, I think they're amazing.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of anti-feeling, but, you know, they've been so well tried and tested.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But they should be done within a program and not overdone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about urine therapy, because that doesn't get talked about enough, and I always just kind of throw it in there for people.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us some of the ways you're talking about doing packs, and do you say you bathe in it as well?
Yes, I mean, I have to say, probably the most powerful technique I've ever done is a urine enema. And, if, you know, with the five elements, if you want to touch the lungs, you work through the colon and the skin. So there's no better way of clearing lungs than a urine enema. And a urine rub, you know, amazing. It really, really is. I always get people to do the rubs first. So that they get used to that. And packing their kidneys, you know, bathing your eyes, ears, or in the family, there's this lovely story. I popped into my daughter's, she wasn't there, and my grandson had a dreadful earache. And my son-in-law said, have you got anything magic in your bag, Bob? And I said, no. But he just went up with a glass and a little spoon, and asked Jamal to pop it in his ear. And he was in real pain. He fell asleep. He didn't wake up until the morning.
Yeah.
But his only trouble was that his sister would tell people in the playground what he'd done. It was pretty immediate, yeah. There's nothing like, you know, forgetting it at Clark and on the tea, etc. No, it's magical. Truly magical. Urine therapy.
How do you do a urine enema? Do you do half and half? Or?
Yeah, you'd start with fresh, do half and half, and then you could work up the strength.
Uh-huh.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, or even produce less. I mean, I feel there are no rules. There was an elderly student 1 year, and she was looking quite perplexed when we were doing group work, and I asked what it was. And she had come by the College of Psychic Studies, and she said, well, what I'm hearing, it should be fresh that you drink. But she said, I drank some the other day that was 22 days old.
Wow.
And she said, I've never felt better.
Wow.
And so, you know, you just sort of think, oh, well, here are the rules to be broken, you know.
So when you do the enemas, do you use fresh or?
I would suggest to people they start with fresh. If I can, I would tend to put some, you know, 3 to 10 day old in as well. And then follow up, making sure you follow up with rubs, because it really does create a huge shift. I mean, it's you giving yourself back to have a look at yourself, really, in doing it.
So, do you say follow up with?
Rubs, urine rubs, after you've done that, because you are going to create, you know, a huge change and clearing.
Rub it just fresh again, or?
No, the rubs, the urine rubs use midstream morning specimen, keep it in a glass bottle, and just a little bit of cotton wool or something like that, loosely in the top. And then to do the rub, if people have hair, you know, around their face, get that out of the way. Put a little bit of this 3 to 10 day old urine in a bowl. Classically, it was a copper bowl to bring energy to the hands. And then rub the face thoroughly and the neck. And then go down to the feet and start from the feet and come up and do the face and neck again. Ideally taking about 20 minutes. You know, really good rubbing. That once a week, but there's no better start to the day. Skin brush. You're involved in hot and cold shower.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Tell us a bit about the castor oil then and Edgar Cayce, because again, it's something that I use a lot, but I'm interested to hear how you explain that, why it actually works, how it works.
Yes. So I think we would probably we'd have to start from the premise that everything is light, you know, and we want to have the maximum spectrum of light within our body. And the castor oil plant is called the Palma Christi because it manifests an enormous spectrum of light. I think there is one thing that has a wider one, which is Billings in red marine algae for producing light under the sea.
Right.
But the castor oil, as you know, you first will put on the liver so that you're actually giving the resonance, because people say, well, you can't see any light, but it's actually giving the resonance of the full spectrum of light to the liver so that the cells are communicating. They communicate with each other by light and colour. So they're kind of bumping into each other saying, get on with the job, and opening the liver up. And then I will say to people, you can put it anywhere else you wish after the liver has been done. So, you know, over lungs or over pelvic area or shoulders, anywhere, having done the liver first for an hour. But it seems to be that the fullest resonance of light that the human can use is held in that, tropical plant, the castor oil. Yeah.
So it's removing the toxins because of the strength of the light in it.
That's right. It's nudging them into better functioning when it's held over certain areas. In other words, it creates communication, because the worst thing with dis-ease cells is they're kind of out of communication. They're more and more distance, you know, out of communication.
And flax does the same thing, but just not quite as strongly.
Flax is not the same. It isn't the full spectrum of light. No, it's rich, as you know, in omega-3, And it has three double carbon bonds and the double carbon bonds. Yeah, but what is interesting, castor oil has no double carbon bonds. And the reason for that, it's a tropical oil, and it doesn't need it, because it grows where there's so much light. Uh-huh. You know, these others are only in parts of the world where there's not so much light and heat. So the less light and heat, the more double carbon bonds. Uh-huh. Go to the tropics and there are no double carbon bonds.
Right.
And they're those stable ones.
Right.
So oil and light are kind of interchangeable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with the flax oil, it's just that it's so rich in omega-3s, that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So long as people can break it down, I would say, as a little add-on, because I do think an awful lot of people kind of think if they just swallow that, because the liver is stagnant, then they need techniques, etc., and a change of diet to really get the liver qi good and strong in order to be able to break it down. Mm-hmm.
Chia has become very popular in recent years as well. Do you use chia?
Yes, yes, indeed, yes. It's a nice seed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about your diet? What are your favourite things to eat? And
what are my favourite things? Yeah, that's pretty easy. My favourite things are water and salads. My parents used to call me rabbit. I've never enjoyed cooked vegetables unless it's in the winter and it's soup.
Uh-huh.
And then it has to be eaten on that day. I enjoy my green smoothie, which I always make with plenty of algae. Because the algae, yes, I'd just like to add this part, Kate, because this is synthesis book. So the carotenoids in our diet produce the melatonin in our pineal, our third eye.
Uh-huh.
And what I've discovered on from that is that the melatonin can be converted into something called porphyrins. And it is those that actually produce light internally.
Okay, could you say that again? Porphyrins?
Porphyrins, yes. So the carotenoids in the diet, so everything coloured and green, enables the body to make the melatonin.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Third eye, pineal, that connection with consciousness.
Yeah.
That can then produce porphyrins. And the porphyrins activate from the cell membrane, producing light within the cell. So we have light from without being trapped, and the equivalent, as above, so below, being produced from within. But the interesting thing about the porphyrins is that they are chemically very like the products the shaman use for mind expansion. So it's a bit like re-educating cells, etc., but through your nutrition. And the algae are very, very rich in all of this. And as I say, the red marine algae has these things called villains that produce light. Because just when I thought I'd sort of got the information together for the second book, one of the graduates of the college was involved with a documentary maker filming these amazing creatures deep under the ocean producing masses of light. So I'm thinking, oh, gosh, need to find out what they're eating, you know. And it is all these algae that allow them, and through the villains, to make these porphyrins that produce this enormous amount of light. So for me, you know, green, coloured, all of that sort of thing, juicing.
So do you take the algae regularly?
Yes, I do. I take them. It's unusual for me to miss.
Which ones do you vary, or...?
Yes, I do. Just depending, you know, the different mixes, or maybe just the solitary ones, you know, in with a probiotic and some D3.
Uh-huh.
Mm. The other thing, actually, that I'm very keen about is lecithin.
Uh-huh.
Because it's this emulsifier between oil and water, you know, I think really important for humans, really important, and for nerve tissue and all the rest, and so good for the liver, so, you know, to stop it being stagnant.
Yeah. The other advantage of lecithin is when you're doing raw food dishes, it's a really good culinary ingredient because it makes everything creamy. So it's just useful in that sense, and then I always tell people about all the other things. But can you expand on that? You just said about the oil and the fat. Can you expand on that?
Yes. Lecithin acts as an emulsifier. so it allows oil and water to mix. Ah. So it's kind of breaking oil down.
Uh-huh.
So brilliant for liver function, brilliant for brain function,
uh-huh.
because it's involved in making acetylcholine for the brain synapses, you know, blood-brain barrier, all those things that are going wrong with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have so much heated fat in their diet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, one of the valuable aspects of raw fooding is that people don't heat fat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you said to me, what do I think is the worst thing that is going on?
Wow.
I would actually say to you, I think it's all the heated fats and damaged fats.
Wow.
It's, you know, coating the cell membrane, so there's no way that the cells can operate properly.
Right.
Yeah, right. Really difficult.
So you mentioned D3. Do you take any other supplements?
And I sort of vary things. I use iodine.
Uh-huh.
I think it got me into a lot of trouble, being so keen about it.
Do you want to tell us why? Do you want to tell us why?
Well, it's absolutely crucial for life, D3.
You're saying the iodine.
I met it first through Gerson because he knew it was necessary when treating cancer.
Uh-huh.
Also, because of the time we're living in now with all the Wi-Fi, mobile phones, all the electromagnetic pollution, it really causes it even more. But every single cell in our body has an iodine receptor.
Okay.
But of course, what is happening is more and more of the water is being fluoridated. And so if fluoride is present and no iodine, it's fluoride that goes into the iodine receptors, which is hugely dangerous.
Yeah.
And so I think it might be 3 years ago now, I was asked to go to Southern Ireland to start a campaign to get the fluoride out of the water.
Yeah.
That's been in since 1962 or 1963.
Wow.
In my words, it's criminal. It is absolutely criminal. If you wish to sedate, you know, and block development of a human being, there's nothing better than deny them iodine and put fluoride in its place.
Right.
You know, it's so important for the features, because the baby's brain develops much more after the birth, all of those things.
Uh-huh.
You know, people think it's thyroid, but that's not it. You know, it controls the estrogen production in ovaries and brain particularly. Yeah. And so I wasn't very popular if I was talking about it. In fact, I was very, very unpopular with the establishment.
Yeah. So you take it in liquid form?
Sometimes, or I might take it in travel. Because I'm moving around so much, it's kind of easier to do. Yeah, but that's another one. It's very rare for me to miss that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Anything? What about B12?
Yes, B12. And I have to say that my body does respond very well to magnesium.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's because of the strong sort of miasmic inheritance background, is very Irish, that whole tubercular thing. And magnesium being so important to keep calcium in place, you know?
Yeah.
So that's another favorite, along with nephrin.
And what about K? That's one that's been being mentioned more in among raw vegans, is K, especially K2?
Yes, in order to balance also the D3.
Yeah.
Otherwise, tend to get problems with kidneys.
Yeah.
Yes.
So is that...
Yeah, especially if people take very high doses of D3.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
So that's what you would recommend as well, people who start doing K2,
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, they're all working together, you know, all this vitamin K injection type stuff as well with newborns. It's going to scavenge manganese. It's going to go looking, because, you know, the vitamins tend to be cofactors.
Yeah.
And the manganese is about the bonding of the baby to the mother. So it's another really weird thing that's going on. Yeah.
So you would recommend people not to have that injection when the baby's born?
Definitely. Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And are you vegetarian or?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been for years and years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But you have dairy.
The only dairy I have is a bit of raw goat's milk if I can get it.
Uh-huh.
I don't mean I drink it. Yeah. You know, as a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not make almond milk if I want to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This isn't actually related, but I just remembered I heard that you were a Scorpio. Can I ask you when your birthday is?
Yes, it's the 20th of November, so I'm a late Scorpio. But a huge amount of Pisces and my ascendant is Taurus, so very interested in the body.
Yeah. I'm 10th of November.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, for Mr. Benjamin, who you maybe familiar, he's the 11th, he's an 11-11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In fact, we're a whole family of them. His father's Scorpio, my father's Scorpio, my brother's Scorpio. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about people like Tesla being persecuted, and obviously you had quite a hard time recently. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but why do you think, what's your views on why that happens? Because obviously, you know, at the moment, I don't know how much you know about all the AFSA and all the regulations, and I feel what we're doing is so helpful and we should be supported by the institutions, and they should be funding us, and they should be telling us to go to schools and hospitals and share this information with people, and instead we're treated like criminals. What in your viewpoint, why is that?
It is wrong, but when you look at the wheels within wheels, and that the NHS is falling to pieces, and you look at the horrific things to do with birthing, it's absolutely dreadful. I mean, fortunately down here, we've got a much higher percentage of home births. Totnes, where I work, only a third of the children are vaccinated.
Wow.
Which is fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, so people are told, don't take your baby to Totnes. We don't mind.
I'm friends with Emma Jones. You know Emma Jones?
Yeah. Emma's an old friend of mine. Emma was a student of mine long time ago.
And she's in... near where they manufactured that measles epidemic, because she said they had the lowest uptake of vaccines in the country there, so they created an epidemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they collected a load of lies together.
Yeah.
I mean, it is dreadful. If you look at the vaccine for cervical cancer, you fluoridate the water, the young girls are taking the pill in teens. There's no way they're going to be fertile.
Yeah.
Absolutely no. I mean, you do know about Codex Alimentarius, don't you? You know, and that kind of says it all. Absolutely says it all. And what I find extraordinary, there was a gathering in Totnes where people are really very enlightened. And I think out of 120 people, only 3 people had heard about it. No. And this is some years ago, not now. Because the media never mentions those.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolute dread.
Yeah. I'll send you my article. I wrote a long article about it because we were kind of, we were threatened with legal action last year. And I started doing a lot of research. But I come up with the same thing all the time, is people kind of feel like it's not, people say, oh, it won't happen. Or it's not, you know, it's not going to happen. I'm like, no, it is happening.
It's happened.
Yeah.
I would say it's happened, Kate. Out there, forget epidemic. There is a pandemic of cancer. There is a pandemic of mental illness. And not satisfied with that sort of thing, they'll fabricate the AIDS story. There just seems to be no end to any of it.
Yeah.
You know, and you have people, dare I say, you know, the people with all the money who are creating more and more vaccines, and just instead of producing clean water in Africa and all of those sort of things. We're sitting, I think, at that very pivotal point, which is why I think all of these energetic things are so important.
Yeah.
And why it is so important that the body is in a fit state to be in touch with its consciousness. You know, I love Left in the Dark by Tony Wright.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant book. you know, and that's what it's all about. Spiritual nutrition, all of those. The fact that it's all been separated so that nobody sees two things running together. Yeah. The control is absolutely incredible. And why I think people like Tesla and Wright, you know, all of the greats, because they knew you could not solve today's problems from the same paradigm.
Yeah.
You know, and I truly, truly believe that the only thing we have the right to change is our human body, because it's the only thing we own.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to access other dimensions. You know, why has that been taught in spiritual sections and nutrition debase in another. It all belongs together.
Yeah.
It all moves together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So important. You know, you have all the chemtrails cutting out the light, the aluminium levels and all of that sort of thing. We've just got to go beyond it vibrationally, I believe. I believe there are solutions, but I think it is about changing one's vibration to access beyond it.
Yeah, yeah. Or that, what do they call it? Sahara dust.
Oh, it? Yeah.
That was chemtrails, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's all tied up, and the aluminium levels, for example, in Southern Ireland, as well as the fluoride, it's no small wonder the number of suicides and the mental health issues there, the amount of autism, you name it, you know. Andrew Wakefield has been exonerated by two universities in America now.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Because his work fits in beautifully with five-element acupuncture. He couldn't have been wrong. You know, otherwise, the philosophy of 5,000 years ago would have been wrong.
Yeah. So what's in the future for you? What are you working on at the moment?
Well, really, it's more and more work, Kate, of bringing nutrition and, shall we call it, the life spiritual aspect into one. You know, really challenging people, you know, even if they don't want to hear it.
Uh-huh.
Really bringing that consciousness aspect and saying, well, it's down to us. We've got to change the vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, and we've really got to get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so more of a workshop.
I've noticed a big, a huge increase in interest in all this in the past couple of years. Are you experiencing the same?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. At last, you know, there are groups, audiences who absolutely want that and know it to be. And it's so comfortable to be with them.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's so lovely to move around. I mean, it's very, very interesting. This aspect is the third time in Bulgaria. I'm going in a couple of weeks. And they have me on television there.
Wow.
And there was a whole hour's television last time.
Wow.
But they had compulsory vaccines.
Wow.
You know, and you think, you know, this incongruity needs to go. People need to absolutely firmly say, no, we're not having all of this.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Mm.
Do you travel much? Is there other places where you're very well received?
I haven't travelled. I mean, Ireland a lot.
Yeah.
Background there, but I haven't actually been. I've been invited to go back to Brazil to do some work there. But no. But the first book has gone into 14 languages.
Wow.
So I'm really, really pleased.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
And what was interesting is that the person who runs Hay House here, very well-informed, knowledgeable lady, said the first place to take your book will be Eastern Europe and Russia, and she was absolutely right.
Okay.
They still have that connection with the earth and that resonance and that sort of integration of above and below. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, they're not letting in GMOs, are they? Putin's not letting in GMOs.
No, that's right. Yeah. And they've really... There's a huge area that they've got sussed, those people.
Have you been to Iceland?
No, I haven't. No.
It's my favourite place. Yeah, they have the best water and the best air in the world.
Wow.
So all the people are so clear and so awake because they're just, like, just breathing there. It's like, you could just stand there and breathe because it's so beautiful, the air. And then, yeah, because they're drinking, they just out the taps comes, you know, like this incredible water. So everyone you meet is really switched on and really kind of awake to things. So they would love you there.
I mean, they denied the whole financial thing, didn't they?
Yeah.
They stood their ground because they... This is the thing. People are so woolly-minded that people can get away with anything.
Yeah.
Just got to get that clarity back.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really have.
Oh, thank you so much, Barbara. It's been a total joy to speak with you.
Oh, it's been a total pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you for giving me the space. Thank you.
So the first book is Cellular Awakening, which I do recommend to everyone because I think it's such a well put together summary of all the techniques and how to you make it very simple. You know, sometimes you get these books and it just seems more complicated and more overwhelming, but that book makes it seem actually really easy and simple to do. which is obviously great. And then the new book, can you remind us the new book?
It's called I'll Return to the Light.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so that's connecting more dots up, really, for uh-huh. people to understand where they've come from and their story and how to help themselves.
Uh-huh. And if people are interested in doing the correspondence course?
Yes, if they go onto the website. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's natnut. .co.uk, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's an open-ended thing, is it? You can take as long as you want to do
it? No, we are actually putting an end to when they can do it now. Okay. But, or if they, yes, and I think it was contacted to find out more what's going on.
Brilliant. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Kate.